I'm Keith Morrison, and this is episode 2 of Hans Christian Andersen's The Snow Queen. Our heroine, Gerda, is on a desperate quest to find her best friend, Kay. Her search has sent her down a rushing river far away from home and everything she knows. She is frightened, of course she is, but determined, too. She has spotted a small house on the riverbank, and she's cried out for help, hoping someone inside that little place can save her. And now, an old woman has emerged, and she casts her beady eyes on Gerda. Who is this strange woman? Friend or foe? Here again is The Snow Queen by Hans Christian Andersen. She wore a large hat to shade her from the sun, painted with all sorts of pretty flowers. "You poor little child," said the old woman. "How did you manage to come all this distance into the wide world on such a fast-flowing stream?" And then the old woman walked into the water and seized the boat with her crutch and drew it to land and lifted little Gerda out. Gerda was glad to feel herself on dry ground again, although she was rather afraid of the strange old woman. "Come and tell me who you are," the old lady said, "and how you came here." Then Gerda told her everything, but the old woman shook her head and made sympathetic sounds. When she had finished, Gerda asked if she had seen Kay, and the old woman told her he had not passed by that way, but he very likely would come. She told Gerda not to be sad, but to taste the cherries and look at the flowers. They were better than any picture book, for each of them could tell a story. And then the old woman took Gerda by the hand, led her into the little house, and closed the door. The windows were very high, and as the panes were red and blue and yellow, the daylight shone through them in all sorts of shining colors. On the table stood some beautiful cherries, and Gerda had permission to eat as many as she wanted. While she was munching on them, the old woman combed out her long golden ringlets with a shiny comb, and the glossy curls hung down on each side of the little round, pretty face, which looked as fresh and blooming as a rose. "I've long been wishing for a dear little maiden like you," the old woman said. "And now you must stay with me and see how happily we shall live together." And while she went on combing little Gerda's hair, the girl thought less and less about her adopted brother Kay, for the old woman could conjure. That's right. She could call upon spirits and craft magic. But she was not a wicked witch. No, she conjured only a little for her own amusement. And she did so now, because she wanted to keep Gerda. Therefore, she went into the garden and stretched out her crutch toward all the rose trees, beautiful though they were, and they immediately sunk into the dark earth so that no one could tell where they had once stood. The old woman was afraid that if little Gerda saw those roses, they would remind her of the ones at home, and then she'd remember little Kay and run away. Next, the old lady took Gerda to the flower garden. How fragrant and beautiful it was! Every flower that could be thought of for every season of the year was here in full bloom. No picture book could have more beautiful colors. Gerda jumped for joy and played until the sun went down behind the tall cherry trees, and then she slept in an elegant bed with red silk pillows embroidered with colored violets. And then she dreamed as pleasantly as a queen on her wedding day. The next day, and for many days after, Gerda played with the flowers in the warm sunshine. She knew every flower. And yet, although there were so many of them, it seemed as if one were missing. But which it was, she could not tell. One day, however, as she sat looking at the old woman's hat with the painted flowers on it, she saw that the prettiest of them all was a rose. The old woman had forgotten to erase it from her hat when she made all the roses sink into the earth, and now that one little mistake was upsetting her whole plot. "What? Are there no roses here?" cried Gerda, and she ran out into the garden. She examined all the flower beds and searched and searched. There was not one to be found. Then she sat down and wept, and her tears fell precisely on one spot, the one spot where rose trees once stood. Her warm tears moistened the earth, and the rose tree sprouted up at once, as blooming as when it had sunk. Gerda embraced it and kissed the roses, and thought of the beautiful roses at home, and with them, of course, of little Kay. "Oh, how I've been detained," said the little maiden. "I want to look for Kay. Do you know where he is?" she asked the roses. "Do you think he's dead?" And the roses answered, "No, he is not dead. We have been in the ground where all the dead lie. But Kay is not there." "Thank you, thank you," said little Gerda. And then she went to the other flowers and looked into their cups and asked, "Do you know where little Kay is?" But each flower, as it stood in the sunshine, dreamed only of its own fairy tale or history. No one knew anything of Kay. But Gerda was determined. She asked each of the flowers, one after the other, about Kay, and they each recounted their own colorful but very mysterious stories. What said the tiger lily? This is the tale she told. "In her long red robe stands the Hindu widow by the funeral pile," said the tiger lily. "The flames rise around her as she places herself on the dead body of her husband." But the Hindu woman was thinking of the living one in the circle, of him, her son, who lighted those flames. Those shining eyes trouble her heart more painfully than the flames which will soon consume her body to ashes. Can the fire of the heart be extinguished in the flames of a funeral pile?
I don't understand you at all," said little Gerda.
"That is my story." What said the morning glory? "Near yonder narrow road stands an old knight's castle," said the glory. "Thick ivy creeps over the old ruined walls, leaf over leaf, even to the balcony, in which stands a beautiful maiden. She bends over the railing and looks up the road. No rose on its stem is fresher than she. No apple blossom floats more lightly than she moves. Her rich silk rustles as she bends over and exclaims, 'Will he not come?'"
"Is it Kay, you mean?" asked Gerda.
"I'm only speaking of a story of my dream," replied the flower.
"What said the snowdrop?" "Between two trees is a swing. Two pretty little girls in dresses white as snow are swinging upon it. Their brother stands in the swing. He has one arm around a rope to steady himself, and with the other he is blowing bubbles. And as the swing goes on, the bubbles fly upward and reflect the most beautiful colors. On goes the swing, and then a little black dog comes running up. He's almost as light as the bubble, and he raises himself on his hind legs and wants to be taken into the swing, but it does not stop. And the dog falls, and then he barks and gets angry. The children stoop towards him, and the bubble bursts. That is my story."
"You all speak so mournfully, and you do not mention little Kay at all," said Gerda. Then Gerda went to the buttercups that were glittering amongst the bright green leaves. "You are little bright suns," said Gerda. "Tell me if you know where I can find my playfellow."
And the buttercups sparkled gaily and looked again at Gerda. What song could the buttercups sing? It was not about Kay, but it reminded Gerda of someone else she knew.
"The bright, warm sun shone down on the first warm day of spring," said the buttercups. "An old woman sat in her armchair at the door, and her granddaughter, a poor servant maid, came to see her. When she kissed her grandmother, there was gold everywhere, the gold of the heart in that kiss. It was a golden morning. There was gold in the beaming sunlight, gold in the leaves of the lowly flower.
and on the lips of the maiden. There, that is my story, said the buttercup. My poor old grandmother, exclaimed Gerda. She is longing to see me and grieving for me as she did for Kay. But I shall soon go home now and take Kay with me. It's no use asking the flowers. They only know their own songs and can give me no information. And then she tucked up her little dress that she might run faster and ran to the other end of the garden. The door was fastened, but she pressed against the rusty latch and it gave way. The door sprang open, and Gerda ran out with bare feet into the wide world. She looked back three times, but no one seemed to be following her. At last, she could run no longer, and she sat down to rest on a great stone. And when she looked around, she saw that the summer was over and autumn was very far advanced. She had known nothing of this in the beautiful garden, where the sun shone and the flowers grew all the year round. "Oh, how I've wasted my time," said little Gerda. "It is autumn. I must not rest any longer." And she rose up to go on. But her feet were wounded and sore, and everything around her looked so cold and bleak. The long willow leaves were quite yellow. The dewdrops fell like water. Leaf after leaf dropped from the tree. Oh, how dark and weary the whole world appeared. And so, Gerda has broken free from the old woman's grasp. She remembers her grandmother now, and her home, and all that is safe and warm. She should, turn right around and go home this instant. But when you love someone the way Gerda loves Kay, you don't always do what you should. Now, do you? Gerda has finally escaped the old woman's clutches, but she's no closer to finding Kay. And then she hears some news from the most unlikely source. Gerda was obliged to rest again, and just opposite the place where she sat, she saw a great crow come hopping across the snow towards her. He stood looking at her for some time. And then he wagged his head and said, "Good day, good day." He pronounced the words as nicely as he could because he meant to be kind to the little girl. He asked her where she was going, all alone in the wide world. Gerda felt she understood very well what it meant to be alone in the world. She told the crow the whole story, how much she loved Kay, how she'd gone looking for him, and how the old woman had almost stopped her. And then she asked him, had he, by any chance, seen Kay? The crow nodded his head very gravely and said, "Perhaps I have. It may be." "No, do you think you have?" cried little Gerda, and she kissed the crow and hugged him almost to death with joy. "Gently, gently," said the crow. "I believe I know. I think it may be little Kay, but he has certainly forgotten you by this time, for the princess." "Does he live with a princess?" asked Gerda. "Yes, listen," replied the crow. "But it is so difficult to speak your language. If only you understood the crow's language, then I could explain it better. Do you?"
"No, I never learned it," said Gerda. "But my grandmother understands it. She used to speak it to me. I wish I'd learned it."
"Doesn't matter," answered the crow. "I will explain as well as I can, although it will be very badly done."
And he told her what he had heard.
"In this kingdom where we now are," he said, "there lives a princess who is so wonderfully clever that she has read all the newspapers in the world. A short time ago, as she was sitting on her throne, which people say is not so comfortable as is often supposed, She began to sing a song which starts with these words. Why should I not be married? Why not indeed, she wondered. And so she determined to marry, if, that is, she could find a husband who knew what to say when he was spoken to and not one who only cared about looking grand, for that was so tiresome. So she gathered her court ladies together at the beat of a drum, and when they heard of her intentions, they were so very pleased. We're so glad to hear it, they said. We were talking about it ourselves the other day. Now, the crow told Gerda, you can believe every word I tell you, for I have a gentle sweetheart who flies freely about the palace, and she told me all of this herself. Of course, his sweetheart was a crow, for birds of a feather flock together, and one crow always chooses another crow. The crow went on with his story about the princess in search of a husband. Newspapers were published immediately with a border of hearts and the initials of the princess. They gave notice that every young man who was handsome was free to visit the castle and speak with the princess. And those who could reply loud enough to be heard when spoken to make themselves quite at home at the palace. But the one who spoke best would be chosen as a husband for the princess. Yes, yes, you may believe me. It's all as true as I sit here, said the crow. The people came in crowds. There was a great deal of crushing and running about, but no one succeeded, either on the first or the second day. They could all speak very well while they were outside in the streets, but when they entered the palace gates and saw the guards in silver uniforms and the footmen in their golden livery on the staircase and the great halls lighted up, they became quite overwhelmed. And when they stood before the throne on which the princess sat, they could do nothing but repeat the last word she had said. It was just as if they had all taken something to make them sleepy while they were in the palace, for they did not recover themselves or speak until they got back again into the street. There was quite a long line of them reaching from the town gate to the palace. I went myself to see them, said the crow. They were hungry and thirsty, for at the palace they did not even get a glass of water. Some of the wisest had taken a few slices of bread and butter with them, but they did not share it with their neighbors. They wanted a better chance for themselves. But Kay, tell me about Kay, said Gerda. Was he amongst the crowd? I'm just getting to him, said the crow. It was on the third day there came marching cheerfully along to the palace a little personage without horses or carriage, his eyes sparkling like yours. He had beautiful long hair, but his clothes were very poor. That was Kay, cried Gerda joyfully. Oh, then I found him, and she clapped her hands. He had a little knapsack on his back, added the crow. No, it must have been his sled, said Gerda, for he went away with it. It may have been so, said the crow. I did not look at it very closely, but I know from my gentle sweetheart that he passed through the palace gates and saw the guards in their silver uniform and the servants in their liveries of gold on the stairs, but he was not in the least embarrassed or overwhelmed. It must be very tiresome to stand on the stairs, he said. I prefer to go in. The rooms were blazing with light. Counselors and ambassadors walked about carrying golden vessels. It was enough to make anyone feel serious. His boots creaked loudly as he walked, and yet he didn't seem at all uneasy. It must be Kay, said Gerda. I know he had new boots on. I've heard them creak in grandmother's room. They really did creak, said the crow. Yet he went boldly up to the princess herself, who was sitting on a pearl as large as a spinning wheel. All the ladies of the court were present with their maids, and all the cavaliers with their servants. They all stood in circles around the princess. It must be quite awful, said little Gerda. But did Kay win the princess? Kay spoke beautifully, he said. He was quite calm and pleasant and said he had not come to woo the princess, but to hear her wisdom. And he was as pleased with her as she was with him. Oh, certainly that was Kay, said Gerda. He is so clever, he could work mental arithmetic and fractions. Will you take me to the palace? It's very easy to ask that, replied the crow. But how are we to manage it? I'll ask my sweetheart and ask her advice, for I must tell you, it will be very difficult to gain permission for a little girl like you to enter the palace.
Oh, yes, but I shall gain permission easily, said Gerda, for when Kay hears that I am here, he will come out and fetch me immediately.
Wait for me here, said the crow, wagging his head as he flew away.
Finally, Gerda is on the verge of finding Kay. She is ecstatic, overjoyed. She has no idea about that shard of glass and how it has infected his entire being. Gerda finally has a helper, a crow, who is touched by the little girl's kindness and pure love for Kay. He does all he can to help, including asking his crow girlfriend to smuggle Gerda into the palace. But will it work? We return to our story. It was late in the evening before the crow returned. My sweetheart sends you greetings, he said. And here is a little roll which she took from the kitchen for you. There's plenty of bread there, and she thinks you must be hungry. It is not possible for you to enter the palace by the front entrance. The guards in silver uniform and the servants in gold livery would never allow it. But do not cry. We will manage to get you in. My sweetheart knows a little back staircase that leads to the sleeping apartments, and she knows where to find the key. The crow ushered Gerda into a garden through the great avenue, where they could see the lights of the palace being put out. The crow led Gerda to a back door, which stood ajar. Oh, how Gerda's heart beat with anxiety and longing. It was just as if she were going to do something wrong, and yet she only wanted to know where Kay was.
It must be him, she thought. With those clear eyes and that long hair, it must be him.
She imagined she saw him smiling at her from the doorway, as he used to at home, when they sat amongst the roses. He would certainly be glad to see her and to hear what a long distance she had come for his sake, and to know how sorry they had all been at home because he did not come back. Oh, what a joy, and yet fear, she felt. They were now on the stairs, and in a small closet at the top, a lamp was burning. In the middle of the floor stood the tame crow, turning her head from side to side and gazing at Gerda, who curtsied as her grandmother had taught her to do.
My betrothed has spoken so very highly of you, my little lady, said the tame crow. Your life history is very touching. If you will take the lamp, I will walk before you. We will go straight along this way, then we shall meet no one.
It seems to me as if somebody were behind us, said Gerda, as something rushed by her like a shadow on the wall, and then horses with flying manes and thin legs and hunters and ladies and gentlemen on horseback glided by her like shadows on the wall.
They're only dreams, said the crow. They're coming to fetch the thoughts of the great people out hunting.
They now came to the first hall, the walls of which were hung with rose-colored satin, embroidered with artificial flowers. Here the dreams again flitted by them, but so quickly that Gerda could not distinguish them. Each hall appeared more splendid than the last. It was enough to bewilder anyone. At length, they reached a bedroom. The ceiling was like a great palm tree, with glass leaves of the most costly crystal. And over the center of the floor, two beds, each resembling a lily, hung from a stem of gold. One bed, in which the princess lay, was white. The other was red. Gerda rushed over to see if Kay was in it. She pushed one of the red leaves aside and saw a neck. Oh, that must be Kay. She called out his name quite loudly and held the lamp over him. The dreams rushed back into the room on horseback. He woke and turned his head around, but it was not Kay. It was the prince, whose neck looked so much like Kay's. The prince was also handsome and young. At that moment, the princess peeped out of her white lily bed and asked, "What's the matter?" Gerda broke down and wept and told her the whole story and all that the crows had done to help her. "You poor child," said the prince and princess. Then they praised the crows and said they were not angry with them for what they had done, but that must not happen again. Then they said they would reward the little birds. "Would you like to have your freedom?" asked the princess. "Or would you prefer to be raised to the position of court crows with all that is left in the kitchen for yourselves?" Both the crows bowed and begged to have a permanent position in court, for they thought of their old age and said it would be so comfortable to feel that they had provision for their old days. And then the prince got out of his bed and beckoned for Gerda to come and lie down in it. And she did. She folded her little hands and thought, "How good everybody is to me, men and animals too." Then she closed her eyes and fell into a sweet sleep. All the dreams came flying back to her, and they looked like angels, and one of them drew a little sled on which sat Kay and nodded to her. But all this was only a dream and vanished as soon as she awoke. The following day she was dressed from head to foot in silk and velvet, and the prince and princess invited her to stay at the palace for a few days and enjoy herself. But Gerda was on a mission. She begged for a pair of boots and a little carriage and a horse to draw it so that she might go out into the wide world in search of Kay. The prince and princess did all they could to help her. They gave her boots and a muff and all the clothes she needed to keep her warm. When she was ready to go, there at the door she found a coach made of pure gold, with the coat of arms of the prince and princess shining upon it like a star, and the coachman and the footmen all wearing golden crowns on their heads. The prince and princess themselves helped her into the coach and wished her success. The forest crow, who was now married to his sweetheart, accompanied her for the first 3 miles, sitting by Gerda's side the whole way. His sweetheart crow stood in the doorway, flapping her wings. She could not go with them because she had been suffering from a headache ever since the new appointment, no doubt from eating too much. The coach was well stored with sweet cakes, and under the seat were fruit and gingerbread nuts. "Farewell, farewell," cried the prince and princess. And Gerda wept, and the crow wept. And then, after a few miles, the crow also said farewell. And this was the saddest parting. He flew slowly to a tree and stood flapping his black wings until the golden coach was but a tiny dot which glittered in the bright sunshine. Coming up on our next episode, Gerda makes some new friends on her journey. She will need them, for she'll face her toughest challenges yet. One of them is a young girl, a very mischievous one. The other, the Snow Queen herself. Will Gerda survive it all?
I'm Craig Melvin.
Cheers.
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 I've always been a glass half full kind of guy. And now I'm talking to some people who look at the world that way too. Some really fascinating folks who share their defining moments, their triumphs, their challenges. Their stories are funny and quite candid. So I hope you'll join me each week. And who knows? you might just come away with your own glass half full.
Search Glass Half Full with Craig Melvin from today on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.